It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. With the world gone mad. All right, that was my movie guy voice. All right, what's happening? What's going on? Look, today we're going to be talking about you and your money, specifically you and your retirement. Michael Eastham from the Fellowship Financial Group is going to be joining me. And Michael Eastman, founding principal specifically of the Fellowship Financial Group in Altamont Springs, Florida. Michael has been involved in financial services for over 25 years. He is an active member of the American Institute of CPAs and has earned their personal financial specialist designation. Mr. Eastman served as a chairman of the leadership Seminole Board of Directors and Treasurer of Seminole County Regional Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, and he teaches adult education courses in continuing education for CPAs, financial planners, insurance professionals, attorneys, and the Florida Association of Realtors. Michael Eastham, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
All right, you know what? This is kind of a big deal. I mean, we're going to be talking about retirement, and I kind of want to see if I can put you on the spot a little bit because, you know, retirement sounds great, but for a lot of people who are what we would consider low-income workers, retirement is kind of like a dream in some far-off land, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, Bert. And it's funny because I come across all types of people in my business, and people have different definition of retirement. One that I've personally latched onto that I like is you work because you want to and not because you have to. What that speaks to is just the enjoyment that you get out of work, the joy, the personal joy and satisfaction that you get out of working, which says that whether I work or not is it has an impact on my outlook on life. And so many people love doing their job, so they work well into retirement. The problem that I also see is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, where you've got these hardworking, diligent American folks who have just not been able to climb up the income scale for one reason or another, or they've had some sort of a medical issue that overtook their savings, a business issue that's affected their ability to accomplish retirement goals. And so all of these things come into the mix that disrupt what when you're in your 20s, you kind of think about retirement. But when you get to your late 50s, 60s, and you realize you've experienced quite a bit of life, sometimes life throws you some curveballs that you're just not able to recover from financially, and it affects your ability to truly retire.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, first of all, and I want to get your opinion on the savings, to me, and that leads into retirement and also leads into investing and stuff like that. I think it's 90% or 80% mindset, because the biggest complaint I hear about people saying, hey, I don't have enough money to save, I don't have enough money to put away from retirement. And these are the same folks that have, $4,000 or $5,000 RIMs, right?
Right.
And then on the other extreme side of that is, I remember this, and this may be, this story might be 20 years old now, maybe 15 years old. It's a while. So you have an IRS agent lady who retired as a multimillionaire. You know, she unfortunately, I don't think she had a great quality of life because, she lived by herself and she only traveled, her travel supposedly only consisted of visiting, of going to shareholder meetings. But on an IRS agent salary, which is not a lot, it's pretty average, when she passed away, she had amassed a multimillion-dollar estate purely from saving and investing and patiently saving and investing. And she invested in companies that she, you know, that she knew, liked, and trusted. So on one mindset, I don't have enough money to save. On the other mindset, she retired, you know, she's a multimillionaire. And,
right.
And her estate is given to her, you know, whatever school she gave it to. So anyway, that was my point. It's 80 or 90% mindset.
Yeah, I think it is. And you know, you to kind of summarize what you just described is in one word, if I had to do that, I would say prioritizing. And in some cases, you're able to prioritize. Okay, what's important to me? And I think we're all taught by our parents or by our educators as we're growing up, you're never too young to start saving, so that you put yourself early on in a discipline or a habit. You create these habits, and over time that habit becomes a lifestyle of savings. One of the blessings of my business is that I'm able to sit down with people who have done just as you described. You know, they didn't make, you know, multi-million dollar salaries or even six-figure salaries, but they were diligent on the back end of their income, of their check, by saving a little bit at a time in a prudent manner, just consistently and diligently. So that's a really good point, talking about prioritization. Now, the unfortunate part is that, you know, there are a lot of people in this country that just they aren't able to prioritize for a variety of reasons. Or maybe they did prioritize at one point, but something tragic has hit them. And I want to touch on that here in just a minute. But before I do, I want to share the reality that even though we're all taught to start saving early, what I find in my business is that most people don't really get serious about investing and saving until late 40s, early 50s. And that might come as a shocker to some people. But you think about it, okay? You're early on. You buy your first house. You get married. You have a couple kids. You got to raise the kids. You got to pay off the mortgage. You got to pay off the car debt. Then you have college expenses. And so on an average salary, then that can be a challenging thing to do. So it's all over the spectrum. And the folks that I have a lot of sympathy for the most are the ones that either A, they've had some sort of a life circumstance that has railroaded the savings that they did have, or they're just not making enough to really be able to save on a consistent and regular basis.
Yeah. You know, putting aside the tragedies that I think befall most of us, if not all of us, and you know, I think that speaking for myself, I think, you know, what you just described is exactly what I did. I didn't start saving until much later in my life. Why? Because first of all, you have this false sense of time when you're 20. You know, what's the old saying? The world is your oyster. I don't know why they say oyster. Why don't they say pearl? But anyway, you feel like you have, you know, 20 is so young, and, you know, a man to retirement, that's for old people. You know, that's not for me. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, two blinks later, I have five kids, and I'm in my 40s, and I have zero retirement.
Right.
And then, and so you make that mental shift, and all of a sudden, like a lot of people in my situation, you're just saving every, you know, now you're trying to catch up, and you're trying to, you know, the pendulum swings the other way, where I started diving into savings and strategies and buying investment and stuff like that. But it's very easy to fall into that trap because I think, and again, back to the mindset, if, you know, savings and retirement is not glamorized on TV, in magazines, you know, on anything, right? If, you know, there isn't a show about, hey, man, look how sexy this guy or this girl is. You know, she's in her, you know, they're in their 40s and they got, you know, and they got a bunch of money in the bank and they're, you know, and they're set for retirement. That's not appealing. What's appealing is look at these successful people, look how they spend their money, look at the lavish lifestyle, look at the lavish cars, the homes, the vacations, and things like prudent money management is not sexy enough for anybody to talk about.
That's so true. And I think that's an excellent point. And I think also the way that you choose to invest becomes very important. Because think about this, you know, you're in your 20s, if you're starting to save, well, you can afford to ride the wave of the stock market. You can afford some changes and some ups and downs because you have time on your side. But if you're just getting serious about investing in your 40s or early 50s, well, guess what? You don't have a lot of time to recover when the stock market drops by 30, 40, 50%. You just don't have it. So your saving strategy becomes critical at that point because you've got to start thinking about, well, what are the types of investments? How can I productively grow my assets in a way that will provide me income in retirement? And that opens up a whole different discussion because of the fact that people are you know, they're myopic generally in the way that they look at investments based on what the media tells us or based on what the Wall Street media really preaches. And that is you have to be in the market or else it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. Well, again, if you're 50 years old, then you've only got 15 years roughly before you start thinking seriously, if not stepping into retirement. So you don't have a lot of time to ride that wave. And if you catch it at the wrong time, you may find yourself at 65 with half the money that you started with.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, so let's you know, dive into some of this and so because you mentioned, you know, tragedy a couple times, and so I want to take a step back and do you have any thoughts for somebody who is for whatever reason, be it a business, medical, whatever other setback is now, you know, starting over again, what, you know, any strategies for those?
Well, yeah, sure. If you find yourself in that situation, and look, the reality is that those types of things happen to a lot of us. You know, we have things, whether they're health issues, business issues, family issues, that relational issues that affect us and affect our ability to save and those types of things. But if you're in a situation where you're at the bottom, not too long ago, I did a TV interview where I was on with a gentleman who had lost his job and he was making a fairly good six-figure income. And yet, in between, because he was a little bit older, it was tougher for him to find a replacement for that type of a position. So he ended up depleting the majority of his investments, his IRA, 401ks. He also came, you know, found himself not able to afford the mortgage. So it was a life circumstance that wasn't by his own fault. It just happened. And so one of the things that he did, he actually started his own business, which can be a very good opportunity because there are a lot of different things, skill sets that you might have that could provide income for your family, albeit it does take time. Again, I'm not trying to paint a rosier picture than it is, but that's one way. If you're fortunate enough to be able to get back into the workforce, then certainly start to operate on a strict budget so that you pay yourself first, so that you do begin to invest, even if it's a little bit at a time. You'd be surprised how it adds up. Now, I would also suggest your income, your investment strategy becomes more focused on generating income. In other words, investing in vehicles that pay interest and dividends rather than crossing your fingers and toes and hoping that the stock market goes up. That's the way you're going to get burned. So it's important to recognize that distinction.
Yes, yes. Hope is not a good strategy in money or in business or, you know, in anything else. And you know what? The other thing is this, because I know here's the other part of the mindset. It's too late for me. You know, what's the point, right? That kind of defeatist attitude. I'm a big believer that, look, it's never too late. Even though you might be 70,
I agree.
And you might, you know, let's say you pass away at 80, you may not, you don't know what could amass. You don't know what could happen. I mean, maybe by some, you know, because you got some good advice, you got into the next, what do you call it, Apple stock, and, you know, and in 10 years you amass a decent amount of money. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that. And you know, something is better than nothing, and a poor saving strategy to me is better than a no saving strategy. Get out there and do something.
Right. And just to throw this out as an encouragement, you know, you actually raised an excellent point. You're probably familiar with the Colonel Sanders story, right? He didn't even start his business. I mean, he struggled for years and years and years. But as a result of a number of tragedies and things that befell his situation, he found himself 65, 66 years old with, you know, on the street again. And
right.
He started Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was in his mid to late 60s and pounded on a lot of doors before he found success. So you talk about perseverance that inspires people. That is the epitome of the American spirit. That's the epitome of accomplishing the American dream. And I see myself as an optimist, and I try to teach that to my kids as well, that no matter how bad it is here in the United States, it's way better than many other countries around the world. So there's so much opportunity that exists, and that's where I just want to encourage folks to, no matter what befalls you, always keep your eye on the next goal.
You know, and I think that Colonel Sanders is another, example of, you know, lifting yourself.
Just bootstrapping.
Lifting yourself up. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, here's, and I know that I may catch some hate mail for this, but it's hard to imagine, during Sanders' time, it's easy to imagine a lot of people doing kind of what he did. And again, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm romanticizing that, because he was part of that great generation, right? And so dealing with tough times and no money was a training ground for a lot of these guys. As opposed to, you look at today's individuals, including myself, I don't know how well I would fare. I think most of us wouldn't do as well under that circumstance at the age of 65.
It's possible, but I don't buy that argument, and here's why. Because, I mean, I hear it today. When I started my business many, many years ago, there are naysayers that say, why do you want to get in that business? There's so much competition.
Yes.
or you're really gonna go out and start your own business, and you hear all of the naysayers that just say, well, it's not gonna work. They want to give you all the reasons why it's not gonna work. But then guess what? You get out there, you get your elbows dirty, you pick yourself up by the bootstraps. It's not a matter of if you're going to fall down, it's a matter of what do you do when you fall down. And so, yeah, certainly there's competition. Certainly it's difficult. Certainly there's regulatory red tape that exists. But again, your mindset is so important to whether you're going to accomplish your financial goals or any goals in life, for that matter. I think it's a ubiquitous reality that if your mindset is, if you're going to go down the pathway of the glass is half empty, well, guess what? The glass is going to be half empty. It's funny because sometimes my wife will, she's very into the weather. So she'll look at the weather report. She'll go, oh, 60% chance of rain today. And I tell her, I say, listen, that means 40% chance of no rain. And I'm going with that.
Yeah. Or if you're a farmer, 60% chance of rain is a good news.
That's true. That's true. But when you live in Florida and you're looking for opportunities to go and enjoy the outdoors, well, then I like the sunshine.
Sure. You know, but I was thinking of the orange growers there, you know.
Yep. You're right. Trust me, we get plenty of rain here in Florida.
Yeah, you do. I grew up in Houston. I used to live in Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and I remember Houston
sure.
and Miami are very Houston and Florida, or I should say Texas. Yeah, I guess Houston and Miami and are very synonymous or very analogous when it comes to rain and humidity.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's talk about this. What do you think? I mean, because look, many people depend on some level of safety provided by the federal government to survive retirement. So what's your
yeah.
take on this? I mean, Social Security, the, you know, will it be around? And my answer to that is I think Social Security will be around forever, but maybe not in the way it looks like today, right? Because
I think that's a good way to
yeah,
look at it. You're right.
Social Security, when it was first created, the average person died by the time they were 65. And so if you made it to 65 and retired, the chances of you living a month the chances of you living 5 or 6 years was minimal, as opposed to today, you retire at 65 or 70, and you might live another 20 years. So
that's exactly right.
Changes have to happen, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this federal government.
They definitely have to happen, but you also have to understand the context of Social Security. And I teach a whole class on Social Security planning for retirees, and people don't realize that Social Security was never designed to be the source of income in retirement. It was designed to be a source, okay, and a supplemental source. Unfortunately, too many people don't look at it that way. Absolutely, changes are going to need to be made, and they're already being made from a legislative standpoint to shore up Social Security. And that includes things like increasing the wage base upon which Social Security is taxed. That's continuing to rise. Cost of living adjustments, changing those, although that to me is more of a shell game. And then we've already changed the age of full retirement age. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that people are living longer. You hit the nail right on the head. People weren't expected to live very many years once they started drawing Social Security. But today, 20, 30 years, people have to plan for a 20 to 30 year retirement. And that includes a lot of things, you know, an increase in health care costs that exist down the road, because you've got to pair Social Security with Medicare and Medicaid potentially down the road if you need long-term health costs and you don't have outside coverage or the assets to support long-term care. So retirement planning and income planning for retirement it has become a very complex thing. And yeah, Social Security, I believe that for baby boomers, they're not going to have an issue. I think that people that were born after 1960 are the ones that are going to bear the brunt of some of the changes. And a lot of that does have to do with the population shift. When Social Security was originally founded, then there were 40 people paying in for every one person taking money out. Today, that number is 3 to 1. And within a handful of years, it's expected to drop down to 2 contributors for every one person receiving Social Security. That creates a huge paradigm shift in the drains on Social Security. So all of those things together say that, yeah, the younger generation is really going to need to look at savings being the primary source. And so that's why it becomes so important to look at what are your savings options, how do I invest my money to protect my principal, to ensure that I have enough income in retirement. Because again, income's the sacred cow. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. So you have two sides of that coin. Income is the most sacred thing, and I think the next step is income management, right? So if you're making a $1 million a year and you're spending over $1 million a year to live, then
got a problem.
You're dumb, but you're still broke. You're still desperate. As opposed to we've seen this over time and time again. People who are patient and humble and they live well below their means, because I think that's really the secret to financial peace of mind is. You know, if you're making 150, 200 grand a year, or whatever, 100 grand a year, and you're living on a $50,000 a year lifestyle, that gives you a lot of peace of mind. You have a lot of margin there for error and for tragedy. And I think what happens, most of us make $100,000 a year, and you know, we're living, right up to that $100,000 a year.
Right. No, I think you're right. So managing the income that you do have is very, very important. There's no question about it.
And you know what? And I like your point there that a lot of people, Michael, do forget, and that is Social Security is not your main source of retirement. It's a supplement to your retirement. That's all. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They've forgotten that. They're hoping that the government will bail them out. You know, I don't know how. You know what I'm saying? They have that, again, back to that mindset thing. They're thinking, okay, hey, you know what? I've worked all my life. I paid it to the system. Therefore, now I'm entitled to something. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you're looking at a situation where it's changing all the time, and we've seen this good people putting in good money and good time into a retirement, a pension plan, and all of a sudden that business disappears. They're left holding nothing. I mean, my father-in-law is a great example of this. He worked at a bank all his career, and this bank has been around over 100 years. It survived the Depression and all that other stuff, and he retired. And luckily, he was a good money manager, and he had a bunch of money saved and invested elsewhere, but he also had this pension. Well, that bank, after he retired from it, like 2 or 3 years, 5 years after he retired, the management of that bank ended up committing some fraud, and that bank closed down, wiping out his pension plan.
And, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But for the fact that he had other avenues, he had saved a bunch of money, he would have been, you know, he would have had gone back to work.
Yeah, and we see that happening today again. It kind of goes full circle back to the original comment that I made and question that you had asked, Bert, and that is that there are some folks that they just end up working all throughout retirement till they can physically no longer work. And some of that is because they want to, but there are a lot of folks, unfortunately, that work because they have to. And that's not the type of retirement that I think anybody really wants. They want to have options. They want to have the ability to choose the way they live their lives in their older age. And that's just a reality that we live with here in the United States. It's not a perfect society, and hopefully the younger you can grab onto that and recognize it, then the better off you'll be in your older years.
Yeah. No, I think that you've hit the nail right on the head, Michael. I think that, it is about starting earlier. And there's a, what do you call it? There's a great, and I'm sure you're aware of it, and I'm sure that I'm going to, kind of mess it up a little bit. But there's a, the story of two twin brothers, and one started saving and investing at the age of 20, and the other one didn't start until he was 40. They both saved for 20 years. So the 20-year-old stopped saving at 40, and then the 40-year-old saved for until he was 60, and the difference between the both of them was like a $2 million difference.
Yep, the power of compound interest in those earlier years.
Because it's the magic of compound interest, and and as you said, staying in the market for the long haul, and all those other things, the sad truth is, or maybe this is good news, is that no matter what, you're going to be a year older, hopefully. And you can be a year older with money in the bank or a year older without money in the bank. And again, luckily for us, the choice is ours still.
That's right. No question.
Hey, Michael, before you go, I want to talk about this. You have a designation of a personal financial advisor. Talk about this. Why is this designation important to me as a consumer?
Well, it's a personal financial specialist, which is PFS, and that is I'm also a CPA. So the PFS designation is a designation that's earned by CPAs who choose to practice financial planning. And so it's a designation that is very similar to the CFP designation, which is just a certificate that you get. But there are classes that need to be taken. There are tests that need to be taken as well in order to earn the designation. But first, you have to be a CPA, and then you become a PFS as somebody who would specialize in financial planning. And so that's why it helps people, the consumers, realize that, okay, I take my profession seriously, not only the accounting, but also the investing side.
Yep, I love that. I love that. You know, bottom line is, as you say, you've gone the extra step to educate yourself. You've been tested in order to reach that designation. It's not given to everybody. And I like the fact of what you said. You take your investing and your CPA qualifications, you care deeply about them, and I think that's important. Michael, we're out of time, but it's been good having you on the show today. Looking forward to having you back again and talk more.
Great to be here, Bert. Thanks so much.
You bet. Good stuff there from Michael Eastham about you and your money. You can find out more about Michael and his team at Fellowship Financial Group. And bottom line, I don't know about you, but what did I take away from today's conversation with Michael Eastham? You got to start saving no matter where you're at. If you're 20 and you can only save a dollar a week, start saving a dollar a week. If you're an old person like myself and you're just starting, then get started. It's never too early. It's never too late to start putting money aside. Having said that, I want you to remember that we all are going to struggle here and there. It's just part of life. But that we can overcome, that we can do hard and scary things. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.